Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC radio network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Wow.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, well, this is Deborah Voith here with Elvira. And we tonight, we are going to be talking, we're going to begin a week late because of technical issues, which could have been influenced by Loki. But we will begin this month's theme of trickster energies and dancing with nature by talking about the trickster deity of Norse mythology, Loki. But first, we're going to catch up with each other and just maybe say a little bit about what's been going on this week. I was just looking before I queued into the show here. My birthday was on the solar eclipse, and my niece Brittany had written a note to me that said, of course, you would be celebrating your solar return on a solar eclipse and a new moon, super moon. And it's just like, yeah, it's been a wonderful week, but very intense. And it's almost like I've had to do like a lot of grounding this week because the energies have been very intense. And and the eclipse was, I wasn't in the path of totality, but I kind of like 90%. So I ended up, I actually thought I was going to end up watching it by myself with my dog, Loki. My dog's name is Loki, and she is a real Loki, I'll tell you. But I ended up, I ended up with... four or five different family members stepped in and were watching the eclipse with me, which was very cool. What else have I been up to? Oh, I worked at, earlier this week, I worked at Altered State of Mind, our local metaphysical shop. And that was really nice because I hadn't been there for a while. I kind of took like a little break. But it was nice to be back there. I liked, you know, it's so fun to do in-person readings and working with people. And just I've been busy just making oils and candles. And, of course, I will be on Hulu Psychics tomorrow afternoon. And I know here locally our Beltane Festival is coming up in a couple of weeks. And so we're starting to do the planning for that. Well, we have been doing the planning for that, but just kind of to solidify things and get things together for that. So that's pretty much been a lot of what's been going on with my week. How about you, Elvira?
Well, yes. Well, that definitely. That last week was very humorous. I mean, I know we went into a Mercury retrograde, and then obviously our topic was Loki, and then the technical difficulties, and I just started to, you know, chuckle because it was so totally Loki and Mercury retrograde. So, yes. And that was kind of, you know, like, oh, gosh, I was all ready, and now we got another week. But it turned out, you know, it worked out well for, you know, the circumstances of just timing and everything. And the eclipse was very good. I mean, obviously, where I live, Arkansas, there was the southern portion that was in 100%. We could have gotten there from where we were, but we aimed a little bit out. And my daughter and son-in-law and my granddaughter and my step-granddaughter, we all wound up piling in the car, and my son-in-law's sister. So we all went out and trekked out to this area of farmland and up on the hill and had our glasses, and we brought camp chairs, and we were going to do this thing. And, of course, the funny part was we never used the camp chairs. We were all standing there leaning against the car looking up, and it was really awesome. We got 98%, so there was just a little teardrop at the top that didn't get covered, and it was fascinating. The temperature dropped, you know, like 10, 15 degrees, and the wind came up, and the clouds started, you know, going from fluffy clouds to these spiky clouds, and, you know, it was pretty good, you know. I was in, like, oh, wow, this is, you know, awesome, and had my own personal experience spiritually. Since I was very, and I even called you, Deb, and we talked about it, about the some cultures and traditions feel that it's, you know, a negative. I felt really strong that it was going to be fine. And, of course, because my patroness goddess is Kate, and, you know, this whole process of the dark and everything, I was like, oh, I'm supposed to go. And actually it was very profound for me. So that was like the Monday, but I mean, we got up early, we did this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Of course, then the next, you know, day I had people and clients and whatever, and, you know, that whole thing. And then I got to, you know, Wednesday, and I had some outside activities. And so I was like, I'm still like going, okay, I'm continuing. And then we have the radio show today. So, you know, it's a really interesting energy, and I look mm-hmm. at it as, you know, we were going to talk about Loki, and then this happened. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, there's a profoundness with the energy, not as much about, you know, what we were seeing or not, mm-hmm. which was phenomenal in itself, but it was just mm-hmm. that energy that sort of takes you into the concept of chaos and stuff. And so I was like, well, you know, I think we're all mm-hmm. experiencing it. I feel, you know, a little bit more, there's almost like a peace now, just like it happened when everything, you know, all the energy slowed, and then it sort of started to pick up again. It was like a reset, and I feel uh-huh. very much like that. So I'm reset to go with Loki, so I'm going to hand it back to you so we can jump back in and talk to Loki here.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet before I dive into Loki, before I get into all of the things about his story, I just want to ask everyone to kind of excuse my pronunciation in regard to some of the Old Norse names that are going to come up during the course of our discussion, because I'm sure that I will butcher them a bit, and so I'm just going to throw that out there ahead of time.
I'm gonna hit that one too, because I looked at them and I'm going, oh my, so forgive us whatever we don't pronounce, that we pronounce improperly.
Oh yeah. All right, so with that in mind, I'm going to start out just kind of talking about who is Loki. Who is this trickster of Norse mythology? So many people are familiar with the Norse god Loki from kind of like from the modern depictions of him as like a superhero, or actually probably kind of more of an anti-hero. In a lot of different movies and TV shows and stuff like that. But just to kind of look at who was Loki, really. So looking at, you know, what does Norse mythology say about his identity? And what I saw is that scholars are still debating Loki's origins and his role in Norse mythology. I think that with that in mind, though, he might be one of the most scandalous of the Norse pantheon of deities. And so much of the information on him is only taken from a couple of sources, and that's the Prose Edda and the Poetic Edda. And these are stories, poetic forms that were written centuries ago, like I think back in the 900s or 1000s, like shortly after the end of the Viking era. And in these sources, Loki's mentioned as being attractive and charismatic and kind of a little, you know, I'm not going to even say it, but he slept around with many of the goddesses, including the goddess Sif and Tyr's wife, Zisa. And so Loki's known as a trickster god and a shapeshifter. And he's also known as a seducer of goddesses and the father and also the mother of beast-like offspring. And so Loki's believed by many, and there's like many stories about him, but then the kind of like the pinnacle story is he's said to have caused a chain of events which lead to the destruction of the gods. And because of his lineage, he's considered a god, but kind of more of a, like a demigod, because he's at least half giant. And some think that he perhaps is a Nephilim. And yet others believe that he's a full-on giant who might have tricked his way into a full-on god status. So we don't really know for sure. But the sources do say that Loki's father was a giant named Farbautin, and his mother was a lesser-known goddess whose name was Laufey. And so it's believed by many that his double lineage may have had something to do with Loki's divided feelings about the gods of Asgard. Asgard is the location where the Nordic gods reside, and it's described as a fortified home or fortress, and it's also seen as like a connection between the worlds. And it's often, like in a lot of the stories, it's portrayed as having like these grand halls where they do a lot of feasting. Mm-hmm. So I guess for background, I can give you the vital statistics as far as he was married to the goddess. I believe it's pronounced Sign, but it's spelled S-I-G-Y-N. And they had a son named Nari. And then Loki also had a mistress, and Gabata. And she was either a giantess or a troll. And Loki had three children with her. One of them was Hel, H-E-L, who ruled the underworld. The second one was Jormungandr, which was a sea serpent in Midgard, or Middle Earth, which is the dwelling place of mankind. And then the third one was Fenrir, which is a giant wolf who was fated to slay Odin during Ragnarok. But one of the more curious things about Loki's children, I'll just mention one more and then I'll pass it on to you, is that there was one more child that Loki had by a stallion named Saddlefari. But Loki gave birth to this child while he was shapeshifted into the form of a mare or a female horse. Mm-hmm. And this child, whose name was, I believe, is Slipnir, was a horse with eight legs who Loki ended up giving to Odin. And so he's quite a shapeshifter and has shifted into many different forms. How about you, Elvira? What tidbits do you have about Loki's backstory?
Well, you know, it's interesting because his how he works with the gods and the goddesses is that he sometimes assists but then sometimes he basically maliciously works against them. So it's never a singular dimension of which way he deals with them. Now, obviously, there have been other stories or other things where he's the brother of Thor, which he isn't. But interesting enough, through that particular little bit of information that I found, he became the blood brother with Odin. So he actually, you know, there was a sharing of that ritual energy in that. And so he sort of became Thor's adopted uncle. So it kind of, you know, it goes around the same way that his history of how he was, you know, brought in, who he was, where he came from. It twists around, and I think it's because in the Scandinavian culture or the area, you have different, like you have Finland, you have Sweden, you have Denmark, you have, and then of course Germany in there, because there's some information that comes with his Germanic, how do I want to put it, information that comes out of different writings and things. And so you kind of have to watch how it kind of moves, again, almost very fluid, serpent-like, through the process. So I thought, well, that, you know, that kind of takes a little bit of interesting study, because, you know, there was a lot of stories, and I kind of want to stay focused on, you know, of course, there's the story of Ragnarok and how it gets going, but and I don't know if you're going to tell the story, so it's about what happens to him because of what he does to trick the death of Baldur. So if you're going to tell that story, please tell me, because I'm going to back off from it. So,
well, there's, I have a few different stories, but so if you want to talk about that one, that would be fine.
Because, you know, sometimes when we are discussing things, we decide that, you know, somebody's going to say something, but because Loki's got so many stories, nobody knows which one of them we're going to be talking about.
Sure.
But it's there. Go ahead.
No, I think that is one of the most notable ones, because it's kind of serves as kind of a turning point. But, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, what happens is that Loki decides, you know, he's going to basically trick Odin specifically engendered his son Vali, which is another son of Loki, to bind Loki because of what happened after he created this killing of Baldur. And I guess I'm going to stick with the ending more than anything. And if you want to jump in, because I found it fascinating, it had a correlation with another story from another culture. And basically, Loki gets bound by the entrails of his one son and Nairi. And it basically
pretty horrifying.
Pretty horrifying. You know, it's like the entrails. It's like blah, but. Skaldi is basically the goddess, and she's responsible for placing the serpent above Loki. Now, so he's bound, and then he has the serpent above him that's dripping venom onto him. But technically, his Loki's wife, and I again, Signin, but she collects it in a bowl but has to empty it. So there's times when he will wind up getting the venom, so he's writhing around and in pain. And that basically is a, which I find interesting, it's a reason why we had earthquakes. That was their reason for putting earthquakes as what happened, because he was writhing around. And I found this whole thing fascinating because it reminded me of Prometheus in the Greek mythology. And that process of binding a god and the for something, whatever it was. And out of that, there was this, you know, these different things that were happening. And there was a thread, and I think it was from the Germanic, that Loki was also considered the torchbearer or fire. Fire was one of his, you know, he was associated with fire. So I was impressed that even if it is from a totally different grouping over here in Germanic and not the Scandinavian side of Finland or Denmark or Sweden, he had these similarities that then over here in Greece, we had this other god have this whole thing, and he gets bound, and, you know, his liver is eaten, you know, by a vulture, and, you know, then grows back. And I'm thinking how that common thread is more the case than just the story. It's like there's something that is behind. Interesting to put your mind in how that here in one culture and another here in Loki with his mischief, because Prometheus wasn't exactly a mischief, you know, trickster, but how that came to be and why, and out of that you have the theories, you know, of how we get into, you know, earthquakes or, you know, that kind of process. And I was, and then, you know, my mind went to the solar eclipse, which is supposed to, among other things, create earth changes and the potential of, you know, earthquakes, not necessarily that moment, but down the road. So this never seems to amaze. That's one of the things that they're talking about, and they have been promoting the, well, not promoting, but it's been questioned that solar, these kinds of major solar eclipses, that this creates shifts in the earth and its, you know, well, tectonic plates and what we know is tectonic plates, but in the earth, and that these incidences happen. And it had, I know this is sort of not totally the story, but it's, there's something in this that fascinated me, that we were talking about this god within this time frame, within what we experienced, and I believe in synchronicity. So whatever we're supposed to be bringing out today, I believe has impact on, you know, whatever people are going to be able to hear it. So off subject, I'm sure.
Absolutely. It's Loki is a very interesting deity. I mean, he has, like, he has that background of doing some very destructive things, but he also has the background of doing some very helpful things. And he wasn't a warrior type of fighter. I mean, he lived by his wits and his cunning, and used a combination of kind of masterful trickery and magic to achieve his objective. And I think it seems like he's gotten a lot more popular in the last couple of decades. And part of it might have to do with pop culture stuff. But I think part of it is has to do with him also being one of those souls that is kind of like the outsider, you know, the one who isn't, you know, doesn't totally fit in to what the expectations. Stuff like that. And so, you know, I think that, and I don't know what all to make of it, but I know that Loki and Odin were bound by an oath, which you kind of brought up, but I kind of kept this one quote from the, I think it's from the Poetic Edda, and it's, say this because we're going to be breaking in a minute, but the quote is of Loki saying to Odin, "Do you remember, Odin, when in bygone days we mixed our blood together? You said you would never drink ale unless it was brought to both of us." And so it's kind of interesting. So that was a blood oath, and it had to do, you know, with sharing their drinks or not drinking if the other one was not drinking. And so that almost seems like a matter of respect. And so that, you know, I think that's kind of interesting. And then there's a couple of other stories, which maybe we'll get into, maybe we won't. We'll kind of see what where things take us, because we're about to take a break. And I'm going to say that it is, we're going to take a break now, but we'll be right back
okay.
to take a deeper look into the trickster deity Loki and break us away, Nagashiva.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
And we are back.
Back.
And ready to take a deeper dive into the Norse deity, Loki. With Elvira leading us off here and jumping further into the deep end of the deeper dive.
Deeper dive. We keep going into the deep end no matter where we are. Well, obviously, one of the things that I really, Loki has a sense of, yes, you say he's a trickster and he can do, you know, he's neither good nor evil. Okay. He just, I think, creates chaos, and chaos creates, well, destruction, which I know I'm going to leave this to you, you know, the onset of Ragnarok and all of that, but it does tend to make me think that energy of destruction is, from the chaos, is how you know, it's like the tarot card, the Tower. And mm-hmm. when you have that, it's because have to destroy something to build something. And, you know, when you think about it, and I go probably because I live in a place where people are building stuff, is you tear down old buildings, you level it, configure it, you level it out, you put the foundation, and then you start building your framework. But you have to destroy that which is around to do that. Now, obviously, wholesale destruction of habitats and, you know, wildlife and things like that is the non-balanced side. But I think when we're looking at something like the story of Ragnarok, which has been iconicized in Marvel and the popular movies that have come out, is it's mm-hmm. about change. And mm-hmm. so Loki is a catalyst of change, in my opinion, whatever we are looking at. So I think mm-hmm. that's more where I see him. And, that doesn't always mean he does things in a very nice way or a proper way or any of that. But the fact that he's a shapeshifter, I mean, mm-hmm. he can change into anything. He can change sexes, which, again, kind of brings you to, we're talking about, very Nordic, male males. And here's a guy that, energy of a deity that changes from male to, you know, female. And you kind of look at this and go, well, maybe there's something here that mankind now is missing that they might have had back there that we were, you know, that changed. But I think I'm going to leave mythology and stories now to you, because I think, you know, what I'm saying more is I find him very intriguing with his energies, and that it doesn't mean I always like the things that he stories about him, that he does these things or depictions of it or any of that, but it's about change. Yeah.
He's very much about change. You're right, like Loki is sometimes kind and helpful, but sometimes he's angry and cruel. And he really has an incredible amount of fire and air energy. And I know his background is associated with fire and air, because it said that he was born of a lightning strike in the forest. And so he's, you know, he's witty and impulsive. Most of the time, the trouble he faces is usually his own undoing. And, you know, such as when he ended up in bondage and torment by the gods. And so I think that there's, you know, there's definitely parallels that people can relate to very much, is, you know, how often we kind of put ourselves in trouble, you know. And then he just seems like he would be a wonderful deity to approach when we are getting ourselves in trouble. That he would be a good one to help us sail through that change that happens a lot of times as a result of the consequences of what's gone on from our actions, you know. And I think, like, some of the different stories of him, like, there's I know the one with the with him giving birth as a female horse has to do with one of the stories where he was being helpful. He was helping to build the wall of Asgard, because I guess the gods were building this wall around Asgard, and this sounds kind of weird, but they ran out of resources, and they weren't able to finish their wall, which you wouldn't think the gods would run out of resources, but they did. And so Loki came up with an idea that a giant should help them finish the wall. And the gods agreed to that, to the giant doing this. But then the giant demanded for payment of no less than the sun, the moon, and the goddess Freya to marry him if the job was completed on time. And so, you know, Loki said, don't worry about it. He's not going to be able to finish it on time. But this giant was hustling. And he had a huge stallion named Battlefari. And so that's when, and the gods started getting very nervous because this giant was working really quick. And so that's when Loki changed shape, and he transformed into a female horse, Ymir, and seduced the giant stallion so that the stallion wasn't able to help him finish the job. And as a result of Loki's trickery, you know, he ended up pregnant and, you know, had a baby horse. And so they weren't, you know, the giant wasn't able to finish the wall on schedule. And, but then the giant tried to kidnap Freya. And, you know, there's something about Freya and giants. It seems like there's always some giant that was after Freya. And but before he could kidnap Freya, Thor ended up, you know, taking care of him with his, knocking the giant in the head with his hammer, so he prevented her from being kidnapped. But, you know, and then there's, another story where Loki is helpful is with Thor. And so I know, like, Loki and Thor sometimes fought, but they were, in a lot of the stories, they were, like, frequent companions to each other, and they traveled together and seemed friendship. And so when Thor lost his hammer, the first person or the first god that he contacted was Loki to help to help him find it. And so so this goes into a whole cross-dressing story because what happened was, okay, so with the help of Freya, Loki shapeshifted into a bird and flew into this giant's home, the giant who stole the hammer. And he found out where the hammer was located. And then this other god, Heimdall, suggested, you know, that they disguise themselves. And so they both, Thor and Loki, dressed up and disguised themselves as women. And Thor was pretending like he was Freya because the giant wanted Freya. This is another giant that wanted Freya. And and so so Thor dressed up like in a wedding dress and all this stuff and had concealed his face. And during the ceremony, the hammer was brought out to consecrate the wedding, and then Thor grabbed it and blew all the giants with it. But
okay.
There's a lot of, like, yeah, there's a lot of very much, and, you know, also shifting, you know, form into animals, into other people, into other sexes. So I think that a lot of people can kind of relate to Loki on a lot of different levels. And I just wanted to say, like, when you were talking about Ragnarok and stuff, just I thought it was interesting, like, the dinner, which triggered the chain of events that led to Ragnarok and the destructions of the gods. It involved the practice of something called flighting. It's F-L-Y-T-I-N-G, and, which is kind of funny because it's a sort of like a contest of insults exchanged between two or more people. And sometimes it's done in verse, like a poetic insult competition. And so I guess that's what was going on at this feast that Loki was not invited to, and then he got, or else he got kicked out, I'm not sure. And then he asked, like, one of the servants, what were the gods talking about in there? And they told him that they were talking about war, weapons, and they were saying negative things about Loki. So then he bursts into the hall and starts insulting everybody. And part of this involved that practice of flighting. I thought it was just him being a total jerk. I didn't know that there was such a practice, you know, where you start insulting the other person. And so, but it was during the course of that, though, that Loki revealed that he was responsible for the death of another god, which was Baldur, or Odin's son. And that really, really did become like a whole, like a critical turning point for how Loki, you know, with his relationship with the gods. And
right.
I know that he tried to escape, and he tried to hide by turning to a salmon. But then the gods found him, and then, you know, bound him and tortured him with that poison from snake. And I think that the thing is with the whole, with the death of Baldur, it's one of those things where Loki was his own undoing. It's, I'll just say, I won't go real much into it, but just, you know, Baldur had been having dreams of his own death. And then Baldur's mother was also having these dreams as well. And so in her worry about this, Baldur's mother, Frigg, she made all the things that were in existence pledge to do no harm to Baldur, and everything did except for Mistletoe, which had escaped the oath because it was too young to swear on it. And so also Frigg believed that Mistletoe was harmless, and so she didn't worry about Mistletoe harming her son. But then when Loki learned of this, he made a spear out of Mistletoe and challenged Hoda, who was Baldur's brother, to throw this spear made of Mistletoe at Loki. we don't know if Loki actually intended, you know, Balder to kill. It might have been just something he thought was funny. He was always really mischievous. So Hoda didn't know that the spear would harm Balder, and you know, Hoda was also blind. And so he threw the spear, and it pierced Balder's chest, killing him. And then, unfortunately, Odin had a child with a giant named Arinda, and this child named Bali grew to manhood, like in one day, and slayed Hoda for killing Balder. And so they didn't really know that Loki was behind it until this dinner when the insults and stuff started coming out. And then Loki himself revealed that he was behind Balder's death. And so so just really kind of puts you in touch with how a lot of times we can put ourselves, I think that I know for myself, usually if I end up in a bad position, most of the time it's because I put myself there. I think that I am pretty good at not giving other people power over me. So if I do end up, you know, in a bad position, it's usually because of something that I did or didn't do. So I can relate to Loki quite a bit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have killed Balder, but I can relate to him.
Well, it's interesting you're talking about the insult stuff, because, you know, that has come down through the ages. It's because it's the story that, you know, happened more human world, is that that's usually when things escalate, is, you know, they start this game of, you know, congenial insults, you know, and then suddenly something comes out and that is more pointed and hits someone or the person that is, you know, the opposite to the game and, you know, doing this back and forth, and they take offense. And it's consistent, whether it's a group of people, you know, hanging out together and doing it, and then somebody pushes somebody and says something, and, you know, suddenly everybody's beating each other up. And it's, it goes out of, it gets out of the fun part and goes into the ugly, dark part, which is interesting because humans are very susceptible, and I gather from these stories, so are the gods and goddesses, you know. I mean, there is a point where they kind of lose their perspective.
And Loki, very witty, but he's very impulsive, you know, and that he kind of jumps in with both feet without a lot of forethought a lot of times. So, so, you know, a lot of people ask, like, is Loki good or evil, you know, and I think that most scholars believe that Loki's neither good nor evil, but rather neutral. And, you know, and then as far as, like, being an anti-hero, and so it's like I was thinking about that a lot, and I actually looked up, like, the definition of an anti-hero, and it's... So it's an anti-hero is someone who is a classically flawed character with good intentions and a history of bad decisions and a questionable moral code. And so I think that Loki was definitely an anti-hero, and kind of made me think of, like, fictional characters like Severus Snape, Harry Potter, or Jack Sparrow in the Pirates of the Caribbean. Where it's like they often do things that lead people to believe that they're up to no good or that they have tensions. But, you know, come to find out, lots of times they have very good intentions, but they just might not be so good at transmitting that. That's what I always feel like. Times that I've talked to, you know, there was lots of times where, just as a psych nurse, where you have to kind of de-escalate people. And lots of times when I would talk to someone who was initially screaming and yelling and bouncing off the walls, if I just took time to kind of listen and, you know, not, you know, come out barrels blazing with, like, you know, setting down the law or whatever, lots of times that, and if I was respectful towards that person, no matter what they were presenting at the time, usually I would get that back. I would usually get that that back. And so, so yeah, I think that, you know, Loki is definitely, like you were saying before, an agent of change. And he is truly about chaos and transformation. Yeah. Pushes boundaries and really challenges the status quo.
So how would you work with him? What would you, how would you go about approaching him? Or working with him?
Right. That, you know, I know that in modern paganism or Norse heathenry, people that are just devoted to Loki, and they call themselves Lokians. And so I'm not a Lokian, but I have like a real appreciation for this deity. And I think that I could see myself working with him. And I think that there are like some, he's a trickster, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's malicious or malevolent. And so I think that like with any other deity, I would do, you know, do research on him, get to know his stories. And I think that for some folks, he seems to have a very intense energy. And so that might be too overwhelming for some people. But I think just like any of the other Norse gods, Loki is known for aiding those that he likes and those that like him in return. And so if you feel drawn to work with him, you would, I think, start out by fostering a relationship with him. And you might want to create, you know, an altar or a sacred space. And make some offerings. I know some of the correspondences for him is, if you work with runes at all, Kenaz, about harnessing of fire for warmth and illumination and insight. That's a rune that's associated with Loki. It's also associated with Freya. I've seen that some people will make up a bind rune, like using that his name. You might want to take a, because he's very much fire energy, I think that, you know, maybe etching the Kenaz rune into the side of a candle and lighting a candle to him might be a good way to work with him. Yeah, because he was born of a lightning strike, and so he is very much about fire. Some of the herbs that I've seen listed for working with him is mistletoe, dandelion. And then those are kind of more the historical ones, but then I've seen some modern Lokians use dragon's blood, cinnamon, clove, and star anise. And those are all kind of like the spicy, warm herbs. Oh, something that I saw that I think sounds like a wonderful thing to do if you are truly, you know, getting further into, you know, communing with Loki and working with him, is there's some people have made their own what they call a snapton stone. And so the snapton stone is a stone that was found recently, well, not so recent, but like around 1950, there was an archaeological find on a beach in Snapton, Denmark. And so they found this soapstone with what is thought to be Loki's image carved into it. And it shows kind of like a, it's something I don't think would be hard to replicate if you look up the Snapton stone. But it shows like a mustachioed man whose mouth is sewn shut. And there's a whole story behind that too, where he pissed off some dwarves that were magical craft. But anyway, and this, what I've seen that some Lokians will do is that they will create their own Snapton stone, which I think you could just paint the image on a stone and consecrate it to Loki, and you could actually dedicate it and, you know, to serve as a vessel for Loki on your altar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be like a very lovely way to make like something physical that you could use as a point of connection.
Right. Nice.
Yeah. And there's animals that, because he's a shapeshifter, there's also, I would say, like, if you are looking for a sign from Loki, some of the animals, you know, or insects that might appear that would be significant are wolves, foxes, snakes, eagles, vultures, falcons, and of course horses, salmon, and otters. And so there's, I know lots of times when mooning or trying to get signs from deity, and if you're sitting in nature, or even, you know, if you're not able to get out into nature, lots of times it might just show up in our day-to-day lives. You might give the image of, you know, a fox or a snake or something that will trigger that thought of Loki.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. One of the other things I did look into, and it was about the web. The snake, the web is, it's about the spider and its web. And there was something to do with his, I'm looking for my notes, because, oh, yeah, it's, he was basically credited with the invention of the fish net, which consists of a bunch of knots and loops. Yes. And that was because of the spider web. And his, you know, being associated with the spider and, you know, the daddy long legs and all of that, which I thought was fascinating because, you know, I went, oh, and then you talk about salmon and that jarred my memory of another animal and why. So, yeah.
Right. So. Yeah. You know, I forgot about that. That's actually a really good point that he's like associated with. And with knots. So that's, that is a really good point.
And actually, you know, macrame, which is not, you know, is also about knots and creating things, or making knot magic, N-K-O-T, along with crocheting, sometimes knitting. those are things that you can, they're about knots. And I don't know if it's exactly what the tradition would create, but if you look at our modern day, it's something that we could, you know, put into effect if that is something that you're drawn to, you know, as part of, you know, connection with Loki.
Right. Yeah, Loki is a very, very interesting deity, and I think that you know, I think he is approachable, and I think if he's approached in a very respectful way, you know, I think always probably with a little bit of humor, but respectfully, I think that would appeal to him.
I know that we're close to our time.
We are getting close. And so do you have any final thoughts before?
No, I think that was my final thought is the best to go.
Yeah. Well, I have had a lot of fun talking about Loki. He is definitely very intriguing. Chaotic, but agent of change. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so before we end, I just want to say that a little bit of contact info for readings or work. You can find Elvira and I on Hulu Psychics and on AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. And you can also find Elvira at www.elvira.com and also at www.milk-and-honey.com. And you can find me also on my website at www.bewitchingbee.com. And so with that, I guess I'll just say join us next week. We are going to continue this theme of energy and dancing with nature with the topic, the use of discernment in spirit work. So now it's time for us to say goodbye and tell them which on, which well, and which wisely. Until next time. Bye.
Blessed be.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.